531. Now for our weekly wrap-up of global politics with the University of Auckland's Associate Professor, Dr. Stephen Hoadley. This morning, Dr. Stephen, we begin with a follow-up on our conversation last week. Can you give us an update on the US and British confrontation with Iran?
Well, good morning, Brian. The good news is that there is no war yet in the Persian Gulf. The confrontation continues. It's a standoff. The tankers continue to be seized. The threats are still there on both sides, and I think each side is waiting for the other side to blink. So not a great deal to report, except the guns have not begun firing. So let's take that as a good sign.
And demonstrations in Hong Kong also, some pictures emerging on internet of possible Chinese mobilization.
Yes, this is getting increasingly difficult and scary. A little bit of context here. First of all, the Chinese government has now been using the word terrorism. Now, this is the first time that this word has been used. It's a highly emotive word, as we all know. It implies drastic measures are necessary. So maybe the Chinese government is trying to prepare the public for some sort of intervention, military intervention or armed police intervention, much more forceful than has the police have done so far. But I just thought I might mention a couple of other aspects of this. One is the T-shirt war. Now, a number of Hong Kong companies, very entrepreneurial, these Hong Kong people, and they immediately saw an opportunity to print up T-shirts for the protesters, and the protesters have been buying them up in their thousands. And these T-shirts imply that Hong Kong and Macau and Taiwan are independent. They're not part of China. Well, this is like a red rag to the bull, because China regards all of these entities as part of the sovereign territory of China. So the Chinese media have been criticizing such firms as Givenchy and Versace and Coach, these firms in Hong Kong that printed these T-shirts. And these firms now have all publicly apologized to China. They've climbed down. They've said they're terribly sorry that they issued these T-shirts. Versace, for example, said it had destroyed all the offending T-shirts and went on to say, "We love China and we resolutely respect the national sovereignty of Chinese territory." Cathay Pacific Airlines as well has come into line saying any of its employees that engages in these protest demonstrations will not be allowed to fly to China on their airlines. So it becoming a kind of confrontation, and the people of Hong Kong are divided between those who want to do business quietly and those who believe in the political freedoms. And it's further complicated because the Chinese are blaming the United States for fomenting all of this activity. A series of documentaries on China Global TV Network implies that the United States, through its democracy promotion programs and statements by various U.S. leaders, have in fact mobilized the protesters, and that this is called outside interference. Well, okay, your listeners can judge whether it really is interference to advocate democratic freedoms and freedom of the speech and orderly process. But this is a kind of rhetoric that's being thrown around. So when we talk next week, we might have some more dramatic things to report. But that's the situation as it stands right now. Chinese government has not yet intervened. The protests continue. The airport continues to be disrupted. The police hint that further tactics are on the way. The chief executive officer says that we're heading for an abyss from which there is no return. Well, we better watch carefully and see what happens between now and next week, Brian.
Definitely watch the space. Now, Dr. Stephen, turning to India and the Kashmir events unfolding, the Modi government intervening. Why and how?
Well, your listeners may know that Kashmir is really a Muslim state, and the most of India is Hindu, so it's a religious division. And the Muslims in Kashmir tend to want to belong to neighboring Pakistan, which is a Muslim country. But India's armed forces, at the time of partition in 1947, occupied half of Kashmir, and the Pakistan forces occupied the other half. So Kashmir is actually a divided state. For a time, the Indian government allowed Kashmir, the Indian-controlled part, to be semi-autonomous as a state of India. Well, they've just revoked that. They have imposed direct rule. So the Muslim central government is now directly ruling the Hindu central government is now directly ruling the Muslim area of Kashmir. They've shut down all the communications. News people can't go in and report. The people can't use their cell phones. The food is running short. They can't contact their relatives. Business has come to a standstill in Srinagar, the major city. It looks like a very difficult situation. I predict we're going to be talking about this in the future because the people of Kashmir are going to be so angry and so frustrated that, we hope they don't resort to violence, but it is always a possibility in circumstances such as this.
Closer to home now, UK's new Prime Minister Boris Johnson just had a friendly chat with on the phone with our Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern. What'd they talk about?
Well, they talked about trade. Now, Boris Johnson is heading for a crash out of the European Union on Halloween Day in October, and he's looking around for trade partners. Well, fair enough. Britain is going to have to stitch up a whole new array of partner deals with trading partners, investment partners, tourism partners around the world, because previously they had done most of this through the European Union. And New Zealand is, as Boris said, pretty near the front of the queue. Well, that sounds great. This is what New Zealand has been wanting for a long time. They want a free trade agreement with the European Union and a parallel free trade agreement with Britain if it's out of the European Union. So in all counts, this is good news for New Zealand that Boris recognizes that New Zealand would be a worthy partner. We would like to start negotiations as soon as possible. Behind the scenes, no doubt the officials are making preliminary arrangements and setting out some of the modalities of how a free trade agreement would work. But, of course, the official negotiations can't begin until Britain is officially out of the European Union. So this will all be happening in the next few months.
And now to one of the big events, of course, in the Pacific calendar, Pacific region, the meeting of the Pacific Islands Forum this year in Tuvalu, which began yesterday. And top of the agenda being in Tuvalu, I'm sure we're looking at maybe climate change.
Absolutely, Brian. You put your finger right on it. And some very interesting pictures. The Tuvaluans had set up a little pool of water with a little island in it, and they put these attractive children all around the pool sitting in the water. And this was to dramatize the effect of climate change and rising sea levels on the low-lying areas of Tuvalu. So this was a very effective, very dramatic depiction of the plight that the Tuvaluans find themselves in. So definitely it'll be climate change at the top of the agenda. But there's a new item on the agenda I'd like to focus on, and that's the plight of the people in West Papua. The Vanuatu government, represented by their very energetic foreign minister, Ralph Regan Vanu, have succeeded in getting the foreign ministers that are meeting there to put an item on the agenda calling for a human rights commission visit to West Papua, to make a report, to report to next year's forum in 2020, and to urging the Indonesian government to pursue a constructive dialogue with the West Papua people so that everybody to refrain from violence. These are the things. So this is not a call for revolution. It's not a call for independence. It's a very moderate call by the Pacific Island Forum. It'll no doubt be opposed by the Indonesian government. That's a dialogue partner of the forum, not a member of the forum, but a dialogue partner. And they'll be lobbying against this resolution. But it does call attention to the fact that the people in West Papua are not living under very good conditions. They have high rates of HIV/AIDS. There's a lot of poverty, a lot of hunger, a lot of displaced villagers as the Indonesian government conducts campaigns to restore order and to suppress the political opposition. And we might just mention that this is we're coming up on the 20th anniversary of the independence of East Timor. And so the Indonesians will be saying, look, hey, if we have a referendum, the West Papuans may vote the same way the East Timor people did, vote for total independence, separate from Indonesia. And this is the last thing that they want in Jakarta. Now, the New Zealand government is sort of stuck in the middle because New Zealand wants to have a good trading relationship with Indonesia, the fourth largest country in the world by population. But on the other hand, New Zealand government does support democracy and freedom of choice and self-determination. So Jacinda Ardern has, we are told, raised this issue with President Widodo in Indonesia. But alongside that, the agenda also talks about trade, investment, tourism, and other relationships. So this is a tightrope that the New Zealand government is going to have to walk at the forum to both honor the inherent rights of the West Papuans, but also to serve New Zealand's material interest in a good relationship with Indonesia.
Mm. And finally, our neighbours Australia could be walking their own tightrope, especially some flak from Fiji's Prime Minister Vainimarama, especially, what is it, coming back to the table after a 12-year absence? You think it's warranted?
Well, that's right, Brian. Vainimarama was the bad boy of the Pacific, at least in Australian, New Zealand eyes, for a long time. Now he's become the champion of climate change, the champion of controlling climate change. And he served on relevant committees, and now he's the spokesperson, very prominent, and coming back to the forum, as you say, for the first time for a long time. And he's going to lambast the Australian government for its coal policy. Australia is rich in coal, and it's a huge industry that employs thousands of people and makes a lot of money for the Australians when they export it. But coal, of course, when it burns, creates greenhouse gases that contributes to global change and rising sea levels. So the Pacific Islands are not particularly happy about the Australians on that count. And Australia is also a staunch supporter of the Indonesian government. So on two counts, the Australians are probably going to have to take a lot of flak from their Pacific Island counterparts.